interesting is this is a municipal election year right now, this year, every other year. These are basically, for all intents and purposes, mayors, they've got two-year terms. You know, boards of education, town councils, whatever they have, aldermen, first selectmen, depends on your town. And it's generally speaking, it's every 2 years. I believe Hartford and New Haven, though, are 4 years. There might be a few other cities like that. 4 years like our executive branch of government. You know, you run for governor and lieutenant governor, treasurer, comptroller, attorney general, secretary of state, all four-year terms. And, of course, our state legislators. Oh, and by the way, our state legislators, House, Senate, 2 year terms, just like Congress. U.S. senators, 6 years. And but my point, though, is that there's so much going on in every level of whether it's local, state. We've got state issues and we've got national issues. I mean, the Speaker of the House has yet to be. You know, I guess they've been voting on, but yet to be elected. And then, of course, now we've got international issues. I mean, there's so much going on in the world, not just here necessarily in the state of Connecticut or in your hometown, which is why we wanted to bring our first guest this morning into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview on. And he knows something about state government. I mean, he was in the legislature at one time. He was also our attorney general. Not all that long ago. He spent the last couple of terms, however. And remember, these are six-year terms down in D.C. as a member of our U.S. Senate. Let's welcome back to the show U.S. Senator Dick Blumenthal. Senator, good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much for having me back.
It's always a pleasure to have you back. Are you in D.C. right now, or are you in Connecticut?
I am in D.C. We've had votes this week. We're in a regular session.
Right.
And unlike the House, we have real leadership and we're doing business.
We'll talk about the House in just one moment. What happened yesterday in D.C.? I saw some images of protesters, pro-Hamas protesters instigated by one of the squad members there. Was it Tlaib? I think it was Tlaib. I guess she had made some comments online. I'd have to look this up. I have notes. But I guess she had instigated some gathering down there. Were you witness to this? And was it peaceful? Or describe the occurrences yesterday. We're all concerned, actually.
I was, frankly, nowhere near that demonstration. I am unaware of all the details or who organized it. There have been, obviously, demonstrations all around the country, limited in size, as this one was in D.C., but I have no direct knowledge. I've been a strong supporter of Israel in its right to defend itself and the action that it is taking to prepare for, apparently, a counter-action against Hamas to, in effect, decimate the leadership of Hamas, which mm-hmm. is a terrorist organization, conducted these absolutely heinous, hideous attacks on Israel, killing 1,400 people last weekend.
It was determined that it was a misfire by Hamas that hit in the hospital there, and Israel was getting blamed for this. And then there was, I don't know if you saw yesterday as well, there was some video that came out. In fact, they were speaking Arabic, as far as I know, I don't know, or some foreign language, but there was some interpretation to with a conversation that actually verified that it was not Israel, that it was Hamas artillery that backfired. Did you see this, and what was your take on that?
I did see it, and there are a number of pieces of intelligence, very reliable, that indicate Israel was not the source of the explosion at the hospital. Basically, it's the video of the crater, or actually lack of a crater, that shows Israel's ordnance, its bombs or missiles, were not the source of it, because there would have been a crater, and there wasn't any. So the indication is that it was a rocket fired by the Palestinian Jihad group that failed to go properly, which has happened frequently, by the way, in the experience of Gaza. And the second aspect of the intelligence is the audio of Palestinian jihad leaders talking to each other, trying to figure out what went wrong with the rocket, basically, and how it hit the hospital. So this is pretty incriminating for the Palestinian jihad. And there's other intelligence from other sources, which I've heard in a classified setting, that very strongly supports the fact that this came not from Israel, but rather from Palestinian jihad, which misfired one of their rockets. But of course, Israel has been blamed for it by a lot of the Arab street, these demonstrations reflected, and we need to make sure the truth prevails.
What is the difference between the Palestinian jihad and Hamas?
Hamas is an organization. It's a terrorist group with a command structure. There are leaders of Hamas, some of them in Qatar, a separate country, and some of them still in Gaza. And the Palestinian jihad is also a group. I don't know whether it can be called an organization, but it is somewhat separate, but allied. There are a number of proxies. You can go down the list that have been spawned and supported by Iran. Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis in Yemen, there are groups in Syria. They are loosely allied, but separate from each other.
Yeah.
And all of them supported, equipped, trained by Iran. And so Iran has been a malign actor for many years and the source of support for Hamas, which would not exist but for Iran's support and help.
There are some who think that if Hezbollah, who is in Lebanon, enters this war, and by all accounts, it looks like that's exactly what they're prepping to do, that would be a war in Israel on two fronts. You know, we see what the Ukraine war with Russia is still ongoing. We see the invasion of Armenia recently. Senator, are we on the precipice of World War III?
I think not. I believe that Iran, even though it is supporting these attacks by Hezbollah in the north of Israel, does not want a world conflagration that would directly impact it. You know, its economy is struggling. It has unrest at home. It's fine with supporting proxies who conduct its war, puppet organizations that attack like Hamas did in Israel and upset and destabilize the region and stop the normalization, which was making some progress with Saudi Arabia and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it wants a real world war. And of course, we sent two aircraft carrier strike groups to the region, the Dwight Eisenhower and the Ford, both of them aircraft carriers, along with destroyers, cruise missiles, an amphibious group from the Marine Corps, to send a signal to Iran and to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
As the president put it very succinctly, don't.
Well, but we're still sending money over to Iran, and money is spongible. So, I mean, many people could make an argument that the $6 billion that's frozen or, you know, it can be moved around, that's going to Iran, could help support Hamas and terrorism.
Well, the $6 billion is frozen, which means it will not be released. If it ever were released, it would be only for humanitarian aid. The invoices would have to be presented. But let's come right to the point. It has not been released. It should not be released. And sanctions on Iran should be toughened. If anything, we should take additional enforcement action to make sure that oil sales are stopped by Iran, that any financial transactions are stopped. You know, I've been a longstanding advocate of stronger, stiffer enforcement of these.
But we're buying oil from Iran, right? It was like $80 billion in oil sales.
No, we're not buying oil from Iran.
We're buying from Russia.
No, we're not buying from Russia.
Where are we buying? From Saudi?
Well, we're largely independent, but to the extent we're buying any oil, it would be from Middle East countries. countries.
Middle East countries.
And it would be indirect. Well, possibly from the Saudis. I'm not sure of all the oil and its sources in the Middle East. But, you know, the United States is largely in energy independent. We're producing most of our oil, I think, you know, virtually all of it now.
I thought we stopped that. I thought Biden had stopped the pipeline and being energy independent here in the U.S. No?
The goal still is to be energy independent. Now, the president would like to rely more on solar and wind for obvious reasons having to do with the environment and also cost. Solar is cheaper than oil in many instances, but we're not buying oil from Russia or Iran.
There's a lot of demonstrations that are popping up all over, well, all over the country, as you know, including right here in Connecticut. And there was one that was rather disturbing. I wanted to just get your opinion on this. It was at a New Haven rally. The SEIU Connecticut State Council Executive Director Cooper Caraway recently made some pro-Hamas remarks and denounced capitalism. I mean, this guy is a representative for thousands of Connecticut state employees. Shouldn't this guy be immediately removed from his post?
Well, first, let me just say, I believe in capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
I have stated my strong support for capitalism over decades of public service, whether as Attorney General for 20 years or now in the United States Senate for 12. And I also believe that Israel has a right to defend itself. I've been at rallies in West Hartford, Woodbridge, Stamford, Greenwich, Cheshire, all around the state of Connecticut, where I've stated unequivocally that I stand with Israel. And I've supported here in the Congress, I'm helping to craft a package of military support as well as humanitarian aid. So my position is absolutely clear in complete disagreement with this gentleman. He has a right to a different view. And the First Amendment gives him a right to express.
But he's representing Connecticut state employees, and that's not necessarily the thought behind a lot of these state employees. But he's going on record at these rallies as pro Hamas. I mean,
and I'm guessing, by the way, that most state employees disagree with him.
Yeah,
that's a guess. I haven't taken a poll. I talk to a lot of folks, as you know. I get around Connecticut.
Sure.
Every weekend I'm back and I talk to people, whether they're state employees or others, and I think Connecticut overwhelmingly, and it's true of state employees too, supports Israel's right to defend itself and take action against Hamas to dismantle its leadership. So he has a right to express his views, and the members of SEIU have a right to choose their leadership, and the state can't dictate it for them.
Okay. Sticking with Connecticut, I'm sure you've heard about the ballot box problem that's going on in Bridgeport. And I just wanted to get your a few words from you on that. What's your opinion on the ballot box stuffing trial that's going on right now, actually, in Bridgeport?
This ballot box seeming scandal is a stain on the Bridgeport election system. And the trial is going forward. I hope that anyone responsible for stuffing absentee ballots into those boxes is held accountable.
Do you think this happens in general elections, or do you think this is just maybe a one-off?
I think it is an aberration. I don't know whether it's a one-off, because Bridgeport's system has had problems in the past, as you know. So I don't want to condemn a city or its election system. By and large, I think election officials in Bridgeport try to do a good job, and there may be some bad actors, and they should be held accountable.
We are speaking with, of course, one of our U.S. senators, Dick Blumenthal. Give us an update on what's happening with the House. I know you're in a different chamber. You're in the Senate. But what's happening with the House of Representatives? Is there any indication that they'll come up with a speaker by the end? Well, I'll say by the end of the week, but the end of the week is tomorrow. How is that going, since you're right there in the fray of things?
You know, I am an observer, not a disinterested observer. I'd like for the House to be governed effectively because we can't do a package of aid for Israel or Ukraine or Taiwan or border security, which we are now going to propose. The president will be formally proposing it today or tomorrow, and I have been helping to craft it along with colleagues here, but it's going to be in a standstill, a stalemate, until the House is able to do business. And so, like most Americans, I care deeply that the House should choose a speaker. When it will happen, your guess is as good as mine. What's happening there? In a word, chaos. The Republican Party is split. This is not Democrats versus Republicans.
Right, right.
It's Republicans versus each other.
Yeah. No,
and
I get that.
I have no profound insight into that practice.
Is Connecticut or, I don't know, the United States for that matter, safe?
I think we are by and large safe. That's an excellent question. I'm on the Homeland Security Committee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also on the Armed Services Committee and the Judiciary Committee. And between them, I have access to a lot of intelligence. I will tell you, the biggest threat to our country in many respects, in my view, is violent extremism within this country.
Sure, yeah. I feel the same way. And I think a lot of our listeners do.
I think we need to keep our eyes open. You know, the old saying, if you see something, say something, it still holds true. But by and large, we're the greatest country in the history of the world.
Got that right.
And we ought to be thanking our law enforcement, our police. I go to these rallies. Police are keeping us safe from the threats of anti-Semitism or anti-Muslim American or anti-black. You know, they're the ones who are keeping order, often at risk themselves, our police, our law enforcement, first responders. We never thank them enough, but by and large, we are safe, much safer than we were before 9/11, obviously. And it was a very profound alarm for us, and we're now much more aware than we were. Still a very dangerous world outside our borders, but we need to be mindful of the threats inside as well.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, Senator. I mean, that's a great answer. You mentioned a moment ago border security. I'm going to ask you kind of a tough question, but it's my job. Do you support completing the wall?
You know, I would be in favor of border security with obstacles, which could consist of a wall in some parts of the border, but there are other parts of the border where other kinds of technological barriers, you know, sensors or even non-wall types of obstacles are much more effective, where enhanced border patrol or surveillance of different kinds is more efficient and cost effective. You know, 20 years ago, we didn't have a lot of the surveillance mechanisms, whether it's drones or enhanced vehicles that we have now, unmanned vehicles. So I think we need to increase border security, but do it in a smart and strategic way. And as you saw, whether it's on the border in Gaza or even ongoing in our southern border, there are all kinds of ways around a physical wall. What we want is the most effective means of implementing border security and reforming a broken immigration system. Let's face it, this immigration system is broken. There are many, many undocumented people in this country who've worked here for 20, 30 years. They've been paying taxes. They've raised families. Their kids are American citizens. We need to find a way to give them an earned path to citizenship. We also need to deal with the DACA students. We need more visas for high tech and for agricultural workers.
But you're talking about the good guys, the good people that come in here illegally. I mean, it's still illegal, and they're still, you know, I mean, we got to keep that word in mind. But with the open border, we don't know. There's no documentation on any of these individuals. And you're right. I'll grant you that. The bulk of them, in fact, the overwhelming majority of them, are good people. But when you've got 8 million people coming over the border, and it puts a strain on our education systems, and where are we going to house them, and food and emergency services, and everything. It just, and we don't, we haven't, we can't properly vet them. It's like me giving you, Halloween is not too far from now. It's like me giving you and your family a big bowl of M&Ms, and that contains 10,000 M&Ms, and 9,990 are fine, but there's 10 that will kill you instantly. Where they are in this bowl of M&Ms, nobody knows. Would you risk and eat them and share them with your family? Of course you wouldn't. You know, and
you know,
just,
I have to confess, I love M&M's, so you're making me hungry, but especially Halloween time.
That's right.
But let me just say this. You know, in 2013,
because we don't know where they are.
On the Judiciary Committee, 2013, we proposed a reform package, bipartisan support, passed the Senate overwhelmingly. It consisted of billions of dollars for border security, reform the asylum system so people could be judged promptly and then deported if they didn't meet the standard. It provided for more visas to businesses that need them, whether agricultural or high tech. You know, a list of reforms that got bipartisan support. I think we can do it again. And what we need is leadership to do it. And I'm hopeful that
I think we need some leadership
after the
in there
election,
as well.
If not before, we can get that leadership. But border security has to be a part of it.
I just worry about the bad actors that have already crossed our border illegally. And, you know, even they're in the, even though if they're in the minority, there's, I think I'm fearful, and I, a lot of our listeners are as well, that there are cells that already exist, and not only here in the U.S., but even right here in Connecticut, you know, that, you know.
I share that fear, and I think we ought to take action against them. And that's why law enforcement is so important, beefing up.
And border control.
Law enforcement, not just at the border, but as you said so well, inside the country, so that people who are here wrongly, who overstay their visas, who defy court orders, they are apprehended.
Okay. My final question for you, then I'm going to let you go. You have no idea how much this our time together means to me, and I know that you know you do call into the, you know, my show periodically, and I truly treasure that. I truly value that.
Well, thank you. I call whenever I'm invited.
You're invited anytime if you want to come in the studio. You know, we'll.
Oh, that's great. You may regret it, but I don't.
No, you may regret it, Senator. With all respect, of course, to you. I think this is a key question. I'm just going to end with this. There's already over 30 Americans killed by Palestine or Lebanon and or Iran. There has been no response from Biden, though. I mean, should there be? And what should he say? What should he be doing?
Well, first, it may seem like a technical distinction, but they've been killed by Hamas and Hezbollah.
Correct. Oh, I'm sorry.
Not
you're right.
Lebanon.
Okay. Well, Hezbollah is in that Lebanon.
And they are proxy. You're absolutely right. And they are proxies for Iran. So it's a, you know, maybe a distinction without a difference.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Practical
term. Sure.
But, yeah, the president has said that we need to take action against these terrorists.
I haven't heard that.
But if he hasn't said it clearly or loudly enough, he should do it again. And I would advise him to do it again. And I will advise him to do it again.
By what means do you think the U.S. will enter this conflict? Is it strictly, by providing ammunition and weaponry, or will there be military action?
My hope is that we can avoid putting troops on the ground.
Okay.
That our assets, in other words, the aircraft carriers and the other cruisers and destroyers that we've sent, the amphibious ship, which has Marines who could land to enable evacuation or take other action, will be a deterrent, and that we don't have to put troops on the ground, and that our involvement will be limited to providing arms like the interceptors that Israel needs to replace its Iron Dome equipment or the precision-guided missiles for aircraft. These kinds of weapons are flowing right now. They are in delivery. They are on the tarmac in Israel, arriving there.
Okay.
So we are very actively providing that support. and the Israelis are deeply grateful for it. In addition, we're providing intelligence, some of the intelligence that I described earlier relating to the hospital explosion due to the Palestinian misfired rocket is coming from the United States or confirmed by it, which the president did while he was in Israel. So we're going to be helpful in various ways, but I hope not by putting American men and women on the ground there in harm's way.
I'm from your mouth to God's ear, Senator. Hey, listen, I'm going to let you go again. I know you don't have to do this particular morning show, but I also want to reiterate how much I greatly appreciate your time and your with us this morning. I know our listeners do as well. And we'll talk in the future. Thanks again for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on and look forward to being with you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Senator. There you have it, folks. Some of the tough questions and the awkward and uncomfortable questions, they had to be asked, and no one's asking him. I don't know if they're afraid, and you run the risk of if you ask certain questions, you run the risk by some that you'll never get them back on again. And if that's the case, then so be it. But he just, as he just said a moment ago, he looks forward to the next time coming on. But I still have my job to do. I have, I've got a boss here. And more importantly, I have listeners that want to know the answers. And I can't just lob softballs and ask fluff questions. But there's tough questions that they need to be answered. So, and the fact that he's agreed to come back on, and as he said in the past, and he's been a man of his word, all along. When he said he's going to come back, he comes back on. So, you may not like his politics. You may not like him. You may not like his answers. But he came on, and just that alone, I give him credit for that. It's not a lot he and I agree on, but that doesn't prevent me from asking the questions or prevent him from having to answer them. All right, we've got to take a long overdue break. We will take that break, and guess what we'll do? We'll come right back. What's your response?